There's about a million things that go wrong in farming, whether it's flooding like now. A lot of people are underwater at the moment because of the flooding has caused big delays in planting. So we've got 1,000 stories of people solving all these unique problems with our data, or at least identifying those problems. So it might be waterlogging, might be pest and disease incursion. It might be better placing their nitrogen fertilizer during the season. We've even got growers that have saved hundreds of tons of gypsum in a single paddock because they've been able to target where they do that application. We've seen people losing $200 a hectare from poor fertilizer spreading, for example, in the fields. So there's a million things that go wrong, and there's a million use cases for the data. So yeah, we've had all of those things, and it's really nice to be able to fix some of those problems as well. And identify and fix is what we're trying to do, and reduce that variability of production.
Hi, Smart Community friends. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a very interesting conversation with Tim Neal. Tim, who was named Australian Agricultural Consultant of the Year in 2018, has over 25 years of experience across Australia and internationally, and 20 of those have been running his own ag tech businesses. He is the co-founder and managing director of Data Farming, a five-year-old ag tech business out of Queensland. In this episode, Tim begins by telling us about his background in ag tech and current work, his passion for helping farmers to upskill and use tech to enhance their farming, and Tim tells us what a smart community means to him. Tim then tells us what led him to work in the ag tech space. We discuss how technology can help in this space, and Tim tells us a little bit about his company, Data Farming, and what they do. Tim then discusses some of the positive impacts his work is having for his clients, the changes he has seen in the ag tech space over time, and we discuss the role of data in the future of the agricultural industry. We finish our chat discussing the emerging trends of tackling data connectivity and data processing sustainably to unlock the possibilities that data can provide. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play with smart communities. The future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Tim. How are you this morning?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
That's good to hear. We're both sitting here in Toowoomba in different locations. So it's just, you know how cold it is. I know how cold it is, but it is actually a really beautiful day, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fantastic weather at the moment. Finally, we've had a bit of reprieve from the wet weather, but it's a nice time of year.
It is. Well, let's just jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
My background's in sort of ag technology, or ag tech as they call it nowadays. And, you know, I'm really passionate about getting farmers upskilled in technology and using technology and advancing sort of, I guess, the mainly grain cropping is what I'm mostly working, but also working cotton and livestock, but a little bit in vineyards as well. But sort of my background, I started, you know, went to University of Queensland and then straight out into government for 7 or 8 years working in the Prime Industries Department. And then from there, there was sort of a bit of the demise of the government sort of agencies participating too much in, on-farm sort of work anymore. So a few mates and I decided we'll set up businesses, you know, and go consulting. And so that's sort of how we really started in the whole journey, entrepreneurial journey in agriculture and in ag tech. And since then, we've sort of had three business iterations and now on to Data Farming, which is our latest business, which actually just turned five years old the other day. So, yeah, sort of growing up in central Queensland was a really good sort of base to really, you know, understand about agriculture and the communities in which we work and live. And then going to college is one of those really good experiences, and then, you know, leading on into government and business. So it's been a real evolution and journey, but not leaving Queensland in all that time.
Yeah, wow. I'm really keen to dive into a bit more detail about your business and those three iterations. Also keen to touch on how you came, you know, to be at this last one, well, not last one, the one you're currently at now. But we'll go broad first. And can you tell us what a smart community means to you?
Well, I think particularly around Toowoomba, it's all about regions and empowering regions to be able to tackle significant problems. And too often than not, all of our skill bases and I guess our skill sets generally tend to head to the big cities. And even you'll find that even Brisbane struggles to capture some talent, in particularly in software and IT and data science and those kind of realms. So we're really keen on pulling those skill sets back into the communities, back into the regional areas. Regional areas like Toowoomba, I mean, it's got a lot to offer. So why not have the capabilities in our regions and not just in the major cities? So that's what it really means to me.
Yeah, I like that. And I think it's really important and sometimes an unspoken or not spoken about enough kind of, result of having the smart community approach and bringing technology and data to help us to make the places we work, live and play more accessible, livable and sustainable for all. That's our motto. But it's like, it's actually this byproduct of bringing talent back into the communities, the smaller communities and the regional communities and all sorts of communities, to actually be able to continue to serve and, you know, work on the technology and come up with new ideas and analyze the data and make decisions with that.
Yeah, we're at the coalface, right, of a lot of problems, particularly in agriculture. You know, it's a regional-based sort of industry, just like mining and gas and all the others are. So, you know, we've got, I think, I have a strong belief that we need to be based in the regions. And so you've got to be fully immersed in the organisations you work in, and I think, or the industries you work in. So I cannot see why we can't have the same skill sets and capabilities sitting in regions as we do in capital cities. I know it's just comes down to a numbers game sometimes as well, but I think you'll find there's a fairly big brain drain of resources into the big smoke, and at the detriment of the regional communities not being able to participate in that. So, yeah, we're very keen on reversing that change. And, you know, with the whole, I guess, with the pandemic, people have certainly looked outside of the cities for living. So I think we are seeing a reversal of some of those trends that are global, actually. They're not actually just in Australia. This is global trends of people moving out of regional areas into cities. And so we are starting to see some of that reversing, and which brings back some of those skill sets that we lost some years ago.
I meant to ask you earlier, how did you come to be in this kind of technology space after growing up in central Queensland and, you know, going to university and things? But yeah, how did you end up in technology?
I guess it's like an evolution. So we've always used technology to solve a problem, rather than a lot of people enjoy technology just for technology's sake, but we can't afford to do that really in an industry like agriculture. So we're always searching for technology to solve problems. And so I started working right back in the early 2000s on some early GPS technology for tractors. And that really kickstarted our whole evolution, I guess, in farming technology, you know, and been through a lot of iterations of that technology, but certainly it's at the forefront. That's what really kickstarted the whole journey. And since then, we're now using satellites, hundreds of satellites buzzing around above us to actually image crops in real time, you know, something you would never have even really dreamt of a few years back. So, you know, the technology is moving so quickly that we've been able to keep up with that pace of change, the evolution of that. And, you know, one thing leads to another. I guess that's probably to answer your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I like what you said about, you know, not tech for tech's sake, because that's also one of our mottos, but you're right, like particularly in the ag space, it's how can we solve this problem that we have in the most efficient way to make sure we've got, you know, the most yield, or, you know, things will be able to be done more effectively, or even just, I imagine sometimes it's even to get the job done at all, because maybe there's not the skills, or not the skills, but the humans to actually be able to do all the things that you need to do on a farm. If you can't bring in new people into that area as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, well, we had backpackers during the pre-pandemic. Most of them were unskilled operators, and the use of GPS systems in tractors to auto-steer those tractors up and down the fields was a godsend, because they could put very unskilled labour into the machines to provide a big labour source. And obviously that changed over pandemic times, and now we're seeing the rise of automation, robotics, because of the lack of labor that exists in agriculture. And they're not trying to get rid of labor, it's just that it doesn't exist. So we've got to be smarter about how we tackle those problems. And you hit on all the issues that we're trying to deal with. One is to increase productivity, because we're seeing a 300% variation in yield in most of our fields. So there's this underlying variability of production. We're also then applying the same rate of inputs onto those, you know, each hectare, which means we're some areas are over fertilized and some areas are under fertilized, for example. So we're trying to make technology help, you know, find the right balance for each part of the field. So we're increasing productivity, improving efficiency, reducing costs, hopefully by doing that, and also reducing environmental footprint. Because once you're more efficient with an input, say nitrogen is a big greenhouse gas emission potential, then we can be a lot more, you know, effective with their inputs and greenhouse gas emissions sort of side of things. So, you know, it's positive on all parts of that. So, yeah, that's where we see it really fitting.
Yeah, cool. I've got a whole bunch of other questions, but let's talk first about, well, because I think some of these will come up as you talk about some of the projects and things you've been doing, but tell us about your company. Tell us how you got there. I'm keen to hear that, you know, a little bit of that journey as well. And then also some of the projects and things that you're working on at the moment.
Yeah, so we, like I said, we've been a real evolution of technology, and this is our third business in 20 years. And my wife and I have always been in business, so it's been really good in that perspective. But, you know, we're just adding, you know, more and more capabilities every time we choose another direction, another pivot, if you like. You know, we sold our last business in 2015 and went back working for people for a while, and then realized that we still have a passion for it. So we started up again in 2017, and this time we're really focused on getting technology to the masses. So getting mass adoption of things like satellite imagery, to the point now where before we started, actually only 4% of farmers had ever looked at a satellite image of their property. Now we've reached 40% of the market in 4 years. So we've succeeded in our ambition, and now we're really keen to take that technology global to a much broader audience. But there's great opportunity there. So we've had some investment along the way this time as well, which has been quite different for us to actually attract investment. And that's been a really interesting journey, and some really good supporters through that journey, and which has enabled us to stay regionally based and really build out the products that we need. So that's sort of how we, I guess, got started. And it was just on a wish to actually increase technology adoption and to think differently about how we actually achieve that, and always customers at heart. Once you focus on the customer and look at where they need to go, that sort of answers the question of where the business needs to go.
Yeah, no, awesome.
What other part of the question do you have? I've forgotten now.
No, that's fine. No, it's super interesting. Thanks for sharing a bit of that journey. And also, I guess, like you said, being in business, things shift and change and pivot. And then also investment is also another interesting path of then developing the technology and different products and things. Yeah, keen to hear about some of the projects and things that you work on. And actually, give us a bit of a 101 on your company now first.
Yeah, so we built a web-based platform which delivers satellite imagery to any farmer in the world every 5 days for free. And that really gives them a bird's eye view of what's actually happening in their field in real time and where the good and the bad areas are that they can focus on. So it's a web-based application. And we also do custom sort of projects for larger corporations as well, but mostly based on satellite data. There's about 8,000 satellites floating above the earth at the moment. And we saw a 25% increase in the number of satellites last year alone. So what that's telling us is that we're getting incredible increase in the amount of data of imaging of the earth every day. And we're not going to have a problem in the future with the lack of data. What the problem is we're going to have is the application of that data. So 25% increase alone last year, that's on the back of 40 years of launching satellites. So the space race is certainly on. And what that means for agriculture is that we're going to get better data, better quality, more detail, more frequently, and for lower price. So there's companies I'm talking to that are talking high resolution captures multiple times a day, even every hour. So we can see that there's going to be just this plethora of data coming. And so what we're trying to do is navigate that to help farmers get the most out of that, to improve that, all those things I talked about, right? So it's an incredible advancement in what's happening in the technology space. So we're trying to make that into really simple, usable tools for farmers and graziers to use in their day-to-day management and to derive deep insights into what's happening in the agricultural space, like how much area is planted to crops at the moment, what type of crops are growing, how much fallow land is there, all those sorts of questions we're answering as well, all from above using satellites.
Yeah, wow. And I guess what are some of the things that farmers are asking you for, or, you know, now that they have this information available, what are those, I guess, what are the conversations that you're having with farmers like?
So a lot of it's around, where do I check? Where's the problem areas of the field that I need to check up on? It varies from it all past the production cycle. So from planting, where's the poor germination? Where's the good germination? What's going on with that? And then when we get into this sort of stage of winter crop, which is the mid-growth period of winter crop, they're all wanting fertilizer application maps because fertilizer prices doubled, in some cases tripled, in the last 12 months. So that means people need to be even more efficient with their fertilizer application. So they're using our data to help build variable application maps of fertilizer, particularly nitrogen. And then when we get closer to harvest, it's about predicting which areas of the field are the most ripe to actually go and start harvest first, because what we've seen in the last about 20 years is about a halving of the number of farms in Australia. So what that means is that the farm size is essentially doubled because the arable land areas stay the same. So technology's got to fill the gap of helping people manage their farms across the landscape. And so we're talking with clients now, they've got very large fields and they're not sure where to even start harvesting. So satellite technology can help with even those sorts of decisions. We also do soil mapping, which is good for fixing up those really problematic soil problems that they've got, like they might have too much salt or the wrong kind of, you know, might have too much other subsoil factors that they need to fix. So we've developed some soil mapping technology, which helps with that. So we're trying to help growers at all parts of the production cycle, from pre-planting, planting, in-crop management and harvesting, all the way through.
And when you're talking to farmers, have you got any of those success stories? You know, I'm just thinking, like, how has this really impacted positively the farmers and their crops and fields and the way that they operate?
Yeah, and as you can imagine, there's about a million things that go wrong in farming, whether it's flooding like now, you know, a lot of people are underwater at the moment because of the flooding has caused big delays in planting. So we've got 1,000 stories of people solving all these unique problems with our data, or at least identifying those problems. So it might be waterlogging, might be pest and disease incursion. It might be reducing their better placing their nitrogen fertilizer during the season. We've even got growers that have saved hundreds of tons of gypsum in a single paddock because they've been able to target where they do the application. We've seen people losing $200 a hectare from poor fertilizer spreading, for example, in the fields. So, look, there's a million things that go wrong and there's a million use cases for the data. So, yeah, we've had all of those things and it's really nice to be able to fix some of those problems as well. And, you know, identify and fix is what we're trying to do and reduce that variability of production.
And being in, I guess, this space for so long, what are the shifts and changes that you've seen over time to be using more tech and more data? And I guess, yeah, what are those shifts and changes been?
Well, the big thing that's happening in agriculture is it's the sort of corporatization of agriculture, is for want of a better word. Because farm size has doubled, we're seeing, and you know, we've lost half our farmers in the last 20 years. We're seeing this big change in the way farming's done now. You could criticize that and say it's, you know, all these big commercial farms, but it's not really the case. I mean, that's the tagline for a lot of people that want to, you know, make out that current agricultural practice is unsustainable. It's certainly not. And it's just the way that people have had to do it to survive, really, with the cost price squeeze of agriculture. You have to keep getting bigger to actually manage that. And plus, we've got an aging population. So a lot of farmers are retiring. They're at the retirement age, so they're selling up and their children may not want to come to the farm and therefore they're selling it to the neighbours. So that's what's been really happening in agriculture. Plus the demand is so high. With the war in Ukraine, it's putting huge pressure on food systems across the world, and production and surety of supply is number one on people's minds, and that's why you've seen food prices rising across the board. Is this the whole certainty of supply and post-pandemic sort of demand you know, rural land prices are astronomically high. Input costs are going up. So, you know, there's a real race to for the whole of the world really to lock up food security, food supply, and manage input costs. So there's so much work to be done, and technology forms a really nice part of that to help people become more efficient. But, you know, generally in Australia, we've got to try and manage those situations considering we're largely an export country. So now we've got plenty of capability here to grow our own food, but there's a lot pinging sort of on the export market and what's happening overseas.
Yeah, wow. And thinking about, I guess, yeah, that high demand and, you know, it's a necessity, right? And sometimes I think we forget where all this food has to come from, right? And all the things that are affecting that. And then, yeah, it's really, I guess, a complex environment as well on a farm. Like you said, so many things can go wrong. But then if you make one kind of, you know, shift to be more effective and more efficient or more productive, that can really yield some significant savings or just increases in, I guess, is it yield? Is that the term that you use?
It is.
Yeah. And I often think, like, in the future, what do you see? And we will talk about future trends in a second, but I am keen to, like, where is this all going, do you think, in terms of using data and technology to help our farms, yeah, I guess, be more effective, more efficient, more productive in the future?
Oh, it's playing. It's the data is the critical, like they say, data is the new oil, right? That's a bit of a throwaway tagline, but I think data has a huge role to play in the future of agriculture. And we're absolutely committed to that. That's what our whole business is about. We're called data farming, exactly why we called it that name, because we see data as a critical component to that. You've still got to plant your seed. You've still got to wait for rain. Like, there's still the things that have got to happen. But if you can make better decisions, your downside risk is a lot less and your upside risk, you know, your upside opportunities are much more. We had a client talking last week. He reckons he's gained 1 ton per hectare across his 3,600 hectares of farming land by using some new technology. Now, that's a lot of money. That's a lot more productivity. And that's a lot more cost savings, a lot more efficient. So that's the sort of impact that it can have. 1 ton per hectare across such large areas is great for food production. It's great for his bottom line. And it's good for everyone. So I think he's doing it very effectively and efficiently. So to me, data takes a really key place in enabling that lift in production that we need to keep feeding our growing populations whilst doing it sustainably. Like, farming at the moment is getting absolutely hammered with sustainability requirements. So farmers have got to now prove that they're doing the right thing. And sure, we've had a very good clean green image, but more and more of that's being asked of our everyday farmers to provide. And guess where that's got to come from is data. You've got to have evidence now. You can't just have handshake agreement. So I think we're at the tip of the iceberg, in my opinion, of where we'll go with data and agriculture, because it's going to derive so many insights that we don't even know about.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it was actually, yeah, you touched on a point that I was going to ask you about, is that measure and monitoring as well, measuring and monitoring for things like sustainability requirements and things like that. But then, yeah, thinking about things like water quality and runoff and all those type of things as well, we'll see more and more, I guess, accuracy and quality of data, and then which will be continued to be asked more of. But I also, I see that at the farming level, and obviously that's happening, as you've just been saying, but I see that's going to lift up into our local government areas and things as well. It won't just be, oh, yes, we are reducing our emissions or whatever the case is. You'll actually be measuring and monitoring, and how are you using this data to make better decisions? That's going to just become, it'll become a requirement. You know, we've seen with emissions, for example, being, you know, now that, like, councils have to, governments around the world have to, I guess, report on all of those things. You know, before it was like, oh, this is really great if you want to do this, we want to reduce whatever. Whereas now, when it becomes that thing that you must do, and so it's actually about getting ready now, isn't it? And in the meantime too, doing things more sustainably, but then also that productivity and efficiency, because obviously we don't want leaks and things. We don't want to be wasting our resources, our water and all that type of stuff as well. So it really is just data is a new oil. I actually like to say data is the new soil, because I think oil is so old news, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think some of those other use cases are kind of not necessarily byproducts, but they are, you know, added bonuses that, or not even bonuses now, they're requirements that will come in the future, but we could actually start them now so then we're really ready.
Yeah, and the feedback we're getting is that not a lot of markets are going to pay extra for that data. It's just going to be a requirement of market entry, which is, again, going to put more pressure back onto farmers because it's going to be more compliance or red tape, if you like, to that they have to do to sell a product, which is necessary and it's coming. It just, unfortunately, it's going to be another burden on growers that are busy enough. So we need to make easy and simple tools for them to be able to collect, in other words, measure, and to report and display that data to others in the food chain, not just grow a bit of wheat and hope that someone will buy it. It's now, I'm going to grow for this market. These are requirements, and this is how the data needs to be presented. And that will then get traced through the value chain right through to the end customer. And when we look at the changes in the requirements for this sustainability certification, you know, it's right through the value chain. So we can't ignore this anymore. We've got to get ready. Like you said, you're spot on. We've got to get ready. But we can't be burdened by paperwork. It's got to be done automatically as much as possible and using sensors and data collection devices, particularly around machinery. You know, there's so many sensors on the machines now. They're all connected to the internet. They're collecting all this data and sending it to the cloud. Well, we need to use all that kind of data to actually do the reporting for us and not be filling in paperwork. So we've got to use technology to close that gap, meet the market requirements without burdening people too much more than what they already are.
Yeah, I think that's so important. Automating those things that they don't need the human touch, right? And reducing that burden. And I like to use the term buying back leisure time, which probably farmers would laugh at me if I said that. But, you know, buying back that time so then that burden is decreased is another way to put that as well. In terms of skill sets, because obviously we're talking about data, and I really like what you said about making it easy and simple for people to take in that data, so capture that data, but then also digest and report on that data. What are some of those skill set changes that you're seeing in the ag space, and what things need to be accelerated even more?
Yeah, so we talk about measure to manage, same as what you were basically saying. So we're seeing a big shift in more, like I said right a few minutes ago about the sort of corporatization of agriculture is the word I'm looking for. When you actually start down that path and people, you see a lot of family farms now getting boards and advisory boards. So they're getting to quite large enterprises. The people that they start attracting then are much more measure to manage type people. So they want to see the measurements and the management in response to that. So that's what's driving a lot of change I'm seeing in agriculture. So we are dragging those skill sets into agriculture via, I think, the structures that farms are now employing. From our business point of view, we need those data scientists as well and machine learning experts to actually do the programming and give us the insights from our data. So we've got data scientists and spatial mapping experts from other industries, for example, coming into agriculture. So we're dragging those skill sets from other industries. Software developers, you know, all of our software developers, and we've got about 10 of them now, not one of them's come out of agriculture. So we're dragging all these skill sets from other industries into agriculture, which is a really good thing. So not only just the farmers getting more skills in this area, the whole industry getting more skills, we're also seeing the corporates getting more and more requirements to measure things. In the past, a normal fertilizer or input supply company, they would just rely on their networks to give them information. Now, what we've found is that almost all of them that we talked to made, you know, the obligatory 10 phone calls on a Friday afternoon to say, how's everything going out there? When in fact, now they want more measurement. They want more unbiased data. And we're seeing a big shift in that this year with incredible uptake in our technologies to actually give those sort of corporate agribusinesses better insights to what's happening, unbiased views out in the marketplace. So, and with travel restrictions in the past, that's sort of driven some change as well. So the skill sets across the board here, like from a farmer level to the agribusiness level, and right back into our business level, we need those skill sets in data science, software development, machine learning, mathematics. You know, nearly needed to employ a mathematician now because we've got so many algorithms and things going on that we need someone to work through that. So they're the sort of skill sets that are needed across the board that have been really lacking in the agriculture industry.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I grew up in Roma and, you know, I loved math was my jam. I went into engineering, but it was, you know, I went to uni in Brisbane and I live in Toowoomba now, which is regional. But I think once it's more, I guess, known that there's technology and data on our farms and that you can go and study your math degree and then come back to the farm and do a whole bunch of other things, or, you know, live in town or wherever the case is, but like actually you can be in the regional areas with these highly valuable skill sets and you can get, I guess, also just have that career that you want. You don't necessarily have to move to Brisbane or more than that, even like New York even or Sydney or whatever, to really utilize your skill set. I think we'll see this shift and change. And I'm really hopeful for that as well, because then you have more people in the decision making of it. You can be more effective, more efficient, but then you can also, yeah, I guess, nurture the young people coming through to join the ag sector because they can use these really valuable skill sets that they have as well. And also input into the, maybe it's a family farm or maybe it's the community that they grew up in or, you know, that they wanted to move to. And I think that's really an important part too.
Absolutely. We were only just saying this the other day about why haven't we got any skill sets in satellite imagery interpretation coming out of, you know, basically coming out of any universities in Queensland. And we're going, that's probably because we never actually educated people that in high school that you could actually have a career in this. Like, I think we actually determined that we've all probably failed in actually letting people know that there is a career here, and things have happened so quickly, of course. Like I said, 25% increase in satellite numbers last year alone. Obviously, things are rolling really quickly, but we need to get back in the grade 10 levels and start educating that there is a career here and you can do mathematics and still work in agriculture, whereas it was a total disconnect in the past. So I think that's what we need to do, is get back to the school levels and educate that there is careers, whole new emerging careers coming out at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, as you said, emerging careers, but yeah, things that don't even exist now will in 5 years' time.
Yeah. We don't want to lose that talent out of the regions. Like it just, like you said, brain drained in New York. Well, that's not really helpful. You know, we need those skills back here to solve real problems. I have real trouble getting data scientists in Toowoomba, I can tell you now. It's near impossible. And the studies show that if you come from a region, you're more likely to end up back in a region. So instead of trying to drag someone out of, you know, out of Sydney and put them in Toowoomba, it's very hard to do that. So let's grow our talent here and get them to come back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I did engineering and I did a master's of data science at USQ actually. And I did that because I wanted to bring those two things together. But you could do the same, you know, similar things with ag, obviously, and data. I think data is just like this perfect, you know, not add on, but like this perfect, I was going to say, it can get married to anyone, right? Like whatever degree you have, data will also help you enrich that even further because we know how important it is.
Yep. Yeah. Essentially, they're tables, right? Lines and columns. And it's the same with our data. It's lines and columns. It's just in a spatial context, but it's still information at a point level. So the spatial component adds a bit more complexity, a bit more interest. But essentially, it's all the same. Data is data, and it's just formatted and has a different use case at the end of the day. So those skills are widely applicable. And, I mean, it's good, been good for us to have USQ on our doorstep, because what's happened is we see a lot of international students come and study, and they either go on to university career, which we then pick up some of those people, or they do a master's like you've done and then want a job, and they stay. We get them to stay in Toowoomba. So it's been a good thing for us, really. USQ has dragged those people into Toowoomba region, which within they come looking for a job. And there's some great mentors out at USQ which have keep shuffling them our way, which is really good too. So without that, I would think we'd really struggle, though, to be honest.
Yeah, and it also goes to show, you know, that the communities and towns and regions are systems of systems, right? All those connections, like that education piece is so important, getting into schools, but then, like you said, having that talent pipeline essentially with USQ. But yeah, I think we just need more and more of it, right? Because we want, even for me to, I mean, the way that I got into my master's, for example, was there was a scholarship that I saw on LinkedIn. I went, oh, I've been thinking about it. And then, I don't know, all of a sudden in 3 days, I was doing master's somehow. But we need to talk more and more about it because, yeah, it's not just because I'm in the smart city space, it made sense, smart communities, etc. But we want other people to just think about those other different career channels. And particularly now, since, you know, post-pandemic, we want people to come into the region, but they can also have different opportunities online, remote working, all that type of stuff as well. So you don't just have to do one thing, which I think is also really key. And yeah, I think Toowoomba is a beautiful place to live and work as well. And it's just, like you said, telling more and more people about it and that there's a career available for people if they want it.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's zoom to the future. We have talked about the future a little bit already, but what are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough in this space?
That's a good question. I think, you know, it's on everyone's minds at the moment about the struggles that people are having with, you know, with the food security and that kind of thing, and the inputs, inflationary prices, and energy prices also have a big impact on agriculture. It's fairly energy hungry in terms of diesel and nitrogen. So those sort of things are going to in the front and center at the moment. But I think there's still some big unanswered questions, and we haven't really pushed hard enough on increasing productivity. So there's a lot of talk around that, but I think most of it's fairly superficial. So beyond that, now I think that probably gives us enough problems to deal with right now. But like you say, we don't even know what we don't know in terms of data at the moment. I honestly think we're at the tip of the iceberg of what's possible, but we haven't put any energy into thinking too far ahead because there's so many problems to solve today. But, you know, to me, that whole data piece, like I just can't see how we can solve a lot of these problems right now, let alone in the future with the increasing number of satellites that we've got to process, the quality of the data. Like, to give you an idea of the data volume increase, we're currently using 8-band satellite, which is 8 different wavelengths of light, right, by 10 metres by 10 metres on the ground. That's the sort of resolution we're working with at the moment. There's satellites that I'm working coming online that are going to be 5 metres, so 4 times as many pixels by 300 bands. So what's like 40 times the number of bands of light. So our data volume is, and our processing requirement has just gone up about 1,000-fold. So, and if you start getting that now, not once every 5 days, but say once a day, you've just times that by 5 again. So you can see why Amazon, AWS, is really excited to get into satellite imaging, because they can see huge amount of data storage and processing requirements. So, you know, we're not even anywhere near the tip of the iceberg yet of what's possible. And we can't cope with what we've got now, let alone what's coming in the future. So how are we going to tackle data connectivity, data processing, and doing that sustainably is a big challenge, because there's a big, heavy draw on, you know, servers, and processing is very, very fairly climate hungry. So how do we actually process in astronomically much bigger data sets with limited resources and limited human resources as well? To me, that's what's going to be some very big challenges for us going forward. And then we've got to deliver that out into a marketplace, like farmers that have typically got very low bandwidth. You know, can't even barely access a phone call. So how do we get that happening as well, so they can actually access and use some of this information?
Yeah, I think that's a huge problem, and one that's just going to get bigger and bigger, as you said, as we go on. The capacity and the storage of data, and what's that even going to look like? Like, as you were talking, like I was thinking about data centers, and, you know, one here in Toowoomba, obviously, but like, is there going to be mini data centers on farms?
Yeah, who knows? Like, how are we going to handle it? Because the thing is, we don't delete everything from 10 days ago. It's all stored still.
Yeah, because we want that historical trends analysis and everything like that, particularly farming, right?
What are we going to do with it all? And it's going to be the whole globe. Like, it's going to be astronomical. Even one company I talked to is going to image the Earth every 15 minutes. I mean, you know, that's just going to be insane. How are we ever going to cope and process and manage that data set cost effectively and sustainably is going to be a real challenge.
That's what I was going to say as well. Yeah, that climate piece and emissions, because we know how, yeah, like you said, emissions or hungry those things are, and how much resources they use. So, yeah, there's going to have to be some massive innovations happening in this space for us to continue to do this sustainably as well.
I'll just sneak in, just before we finish, a little innovation that we're working on is actually processing on board the satellite. So we're working with a company out of Sydney. They've built a little chip, a little GPUs that actually sit on a satellite and do the processing up in the sky instead of on the ground, and just send us the output. So the volume of data that they're sending down is going to be like a thousandth of what we actually need, so of what's actually captured. So I think that edge computing, that innovation like that, is going to help us. So pretty amazing that we're actually going to be able to detect crop type from the spacecraft and just send us down the output and not have to do any of the work. So I think those sort of innovations are what's going to help us in the long run.
Yeah, even, you know, that sentence is so science fiction, right? But it comes to life, right?
Well, they're working on it right now. They've actually got some, they've already deployed some of their GPUs in space. So you're putting a very serious computer capability on a tiny little spacecraft that's about the size of a shoebox. So the requirements and the capability to do that are incredible. So that's the kind of stuff that's coming. That's the really exciting stuff we work on every day. And yeah, it's great fun to be part of the whole space industry and agriculture industry and joining the two together. It's really fun.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I think we could have a lot more conversations. I'm just thinking about all the things around, even watching some of the stuff that USQ is doing around space and you know, like you said, linking ag and space together, who would have thought that that would be a thing? Okay. Well, Tim, it's been so great to have you on the podcast. I really, really enjoyed this conversation and we'll have to have a catch up in person one day. I'd love to come. I need to get out on a farm again. I haven't been out onto a farm for a long time.
Yeah. More than welcome.
Thank you. I think we could have many more conversations and come up with some great ideas as well. And I'm also very passionate about smart regions is what we call it. So bring those skill sets in as well. So we'll have another conversation really soon. But one last question, how can people connect with you?
Yeah, LinkedIn or Twitter. Mine is TimNeal1, N-E-A-L-E-1, or data_farming is our Twitter handle. And we're on Facebook and all the major socials. So, yeah, look forward to connecting and touching base with your listeners. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. We'll put all the links in the show notes so people can click away and find you. Thank you again for coming onto the podcast. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Tim. Bye.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're looking for support in podcast strategy and production, workshop design and facilitation, or communication and media advisory, get in touch. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with 2 M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.